webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for July 25, 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee. And here, from the far end of a long cul-de-sac behind the Golden Gates in the Citadel of Unvarnished Truth in Houston, Texas, please welcome from the GR headquarters the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good morning, Barris Bartlett.
How are you, mate?
I am good. I'm having it's a beautiful morning in Houston. I know everybody's really tired of hearing that, but it really is. I don't know what has happened this year, but it seems as though Tennessee or in the Northeast have taken all of our miserable summer weather and just sucked it right out of here. So it's been very pleasant.
Yeah, thank
but,
you.
Yeah,
we really appreciate
it. You're very welcome.
Yeah. It's rained here for about two weeks solid, mate, and I mean, it's not good. It's not good, mate. I pulled two moles out of the ground. They were swimming. I had moles in my front yard swimming. Don't worry. Hey, what are we going to talk about? What are we going to talk about today, Michael?
I don't know, but it's off to a bad start.
Swimming moles. Remember, stick around, family, where we say, or at least we agree with Napoleon Bonaparte, that religion is excellent stuff for keeping common people quiet. Religion is what keeps the poor from murdering the rich.
Gospel Revolution.
Hey, Mike, did you have an interesting week?
This is one of those times this question is going to really pay off.
Okay, moving right along now.
Yes, my goodness, this was Calgary week. Calgary, Alberta. Beautiful, beautiful flight from Houston to Calgary. And the folks in Canada met us there. We had a great group. We had a very diverse crowd. Two of our attendees were 84 years old. One of our friends, she and her friend drove over from Kelowna, drove 12 hours to come to the meetings. One of the other people that's an 84-year-old has been with the Gospel Revolution probably going on 10 years. He was in the Worldwide Church of God and was a part of the total collapse of that organization worldwide due to the influx of tapes from Mike Williams Ministries.
Now, Mike, yeah. What you were describing there was the Worldwide Church of God, Herbert W. Armstrong, Plain Truth yes. Magazine, radio stations correct. All around the world, right?
Yes, that's correct. Uh-huh. And it just suffered a major collapse because we cried, grace, grace unto it, and the whole thing fell apart. My tapes were barred, banned, and everything else, but it still didn't work. The organization fell apart completely. Both of these 84-year-olds, though, Barris, took away all of my concern about aging altogether. These two were just as vital as you possibly could be. This gentleman, he was cool. He was 84 years old and he's cool. it was just amazing. His son told us all about this amazing change in his father. He said, my father changed so drastically over the last 10 years. And the father-son relationship could not have been better. It was just beautiful. We had all of our other gospel revolutionaries there. It was just such a wonderful time to get to see everybody again. When I go to Calgary, I'm going home because there's just so many people there that I love being around. Eva Mull attended the conference, so it was just an amazing time, actually.
What did you talk about?
Our subject was the mystery of faith.
Oh?
Are you busy?
I'm doing a little bit of highlighting here, mate, for later in the show. But, hey, listen, did they like it? I mean, I've heard Eva, and she sounds like an angel, mate. She sounds gorgeous.
It was just unbelievable. I set up a time on Saturday morning. I decided, well, we'll have a concert. And I think that they were just taken aback by this really incredible talent playing her guitar and singing. And she did these songs that everybody knew in the building. There was no one that their childhood was not affected by it. And it really was enjoyable. There was a couple of places where she had to stop and read a little more closely. She had her sheet music with her. She wasn't completely smooth in a couple of places. And with Eva being the professional that she is, I was kind of surprised, actually. But she explained to everyone that this was the first time she had sang these songs in 28 years, that when she came into Christianity, that she had to stop singing secular music. As beautiful as her singing was, it touched everyone so deeply when they realized that she was singing songs that she had not sang for 28 years. The theft of her greatest talent and greatest ability in her Christian experience. It was stinging to the conscience to realize what had happened in all of our lives. I think the reality of so much that many of us had lost in the name of holiness or not being secular and making sure we were spiritual, how much was so lost. But she did such a fantastic job. So every time we opened the doors, everybody, have Eva sing a couple of songs first. So
you were upstaged.
I was a sideshow. I wasn't just upstaged. I was just a sideshow.
I remember years ago, particularly in self-improvement seminars and so forth, we were taught that if you can train an elephant just with a chain and a spike on its leg while he's quite young, when he's old, he won't even try to pull the spike out of the ground. And from there, people told us that was like us. And then we were given the picture of the flea circus and how they train fleas, and they put a bit of glass on top and the flea jumps up so high it hurts its head, never jumps out of that aquarium again because it knows it doesn't want to just touch that glass again with its head. and how they had glass between fish and sharks would starve to death rather than try and go for the fish because they knew when they hit that glass they'd hurt themselves. When they took the glass away, the minnows would swim around the shark and the shark would just starve to death. I thought that was all the bad stuff in my life. I didn't realize it was my religion. That was the stake. That was the glass for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and to watch the natural process begin to take back over again in all of our lives, and Eva made that very clear to all of us, this is an incredible journey. This was 1 year ago this week that Richard was dying. Richard passed away July the 31st of last year, and here 1 year later I'm in Calgary with Richard's wife. They had been in a deadlock about the gospel for the last 18 years. One of the things that I think was also very revealing about Eva and about the gospel also was the degree of honesty that she shared with the people about how difficult it became in their relationship. And this is two people that really loved each other. But she shared with them what happened in her religious mindset, and then she told them she was mean to Richard. You know, you just don't get people to come to that level of honesty at any stage, much less right after the death of someone in their life. She said one of the things that she noticed is that over the last 18 years, she said, Richard enjoyed people and I judged people. And again, it was just shocking, this reality of the difference between Christianity and the gospel. Eva displayed that for us without even knowing, I think, that that's what she was doing. When you can say that over the last 18 years, someone who has been involved in the gospel was enjoying people, and I as a Christian was judging people, enough said. You know, it was powerful, to say the least. It was very powerful.
Wow.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Synthetic religion, that's my delight. Synthetic religion helps me sleep tight. Synthetic religion, Sundays attend. It's good to be holy and not like other men.
How's Jeff's surgery going, bro?
Jeff is recovering. Still dealing with some pain from the results of the surgery. And here again, goodness gracious, this is just a morning for me, I suppose.
Go ahead and sob. We want to see it, mate.
So here we have Jeff find a means by which that he can have a home of his own where he can actually have a life. Then, of course, we find out that we've lost this location for our office and thus losing the location for Jeff having a separate location. And then we find out that Jeff has to have surgery on his legs, which is a very extensive surgery, actually. And then we find out that Jeff's truck, which he has to use to load a U-Haul and pull everything up here, that it's blown a head gasket. So here we have the guy that we've got to move the offices, has to have the surgery. He has to recover from the surgery before the move can be made. His surgery is on his legs. The truck is now in the shop for a week. The man who just had surgery on his legs has to walk every place that he goes to get things done.
Oh, what's his problem? The boy's a marshmallow, mate. Grow some stamina there, Jeffrey.
You
couldn't write this stuff, could you, mate, if it was a screenplay?
It's craziness. This is just all craziness.
Our thoughts are with you, Jeff, and
yes,
particularly when you have to walk all the way to Houston.
And then, of course, the expense, which everybody knows, if we have funds, they're going out the door to do something. You know, that's just all there is to it. Of course, Jeff doesn't make enough money to pay for surgery. I mean, so while we don't have the funds to pay for salaries that people deserve when people are in need, we do our best to step up to the plate to do something about that. So here, right on the heels of Jeff's surgery, the very vehicle that we are depending on, not Jeff, the entire gospel revolution is depending on an old pickup truck.
We got to buy Japanese next time, mate. Those old Fords.
Of course, he's made buddies with the people down there, and he talks them down to the lowest low price of the price of the lowest price that could possibly be gotten.
And then gets a discount.
And then got a discount on top of that. And so we're paying $1,300 to have the repairs done on the truck while Jeff, who just had surgery on his legs, is walking 11 blocks to the closest place to pick up supplies that he needs. So I'm amazed.
Jeff has a new movie up. Jeff is trying to put a movie up a week now, mate, and we have had a real upturn in the numbers of people who have subscribed to our YouTube channel, I think, as a result of this. His latest one was How Can You Sin When There Ain't No Such Thing as Sin? It's really interesting. This is a powerful movie. Family, get up there. Channel Gospel Revolution 1 on YouTube.com. Go there and listen to Jeff, and powerful is the only word that I can really use.
Spread the religion of the rhythm of life. Gospel Revolution.
We got a letter this week, Michael. I thought it would be good for us to read it to everyone on the PowerCast just to catch them up with what's been happening in this neck of the woods. It says, "Greetings from the land of Kenya. On behalf of the School of the Scriptures and the College of Journalism, I would like to thank you guys for all your kind and generous contributions. We gladly appreciated so much your financial support. You made us reach where we are today as we grow towards financial stability. Also, we can't forget to thank Mike Williams and Victor Brennan for making the funds that you contribute available to us on time. Thanks a million, guys. We also thank all the other gospel revolutionaries across the world for their support here in Kenya." Now, before I read the rest of it, this is the place, Mike, where we have Muslims, Christians, Calathumpians, all sorts of folks coming together under one roof to say, oh, this is so great that we are one. I mean, this is something over there that's happening. He goes on, "Many have been able to put food on their table through employment because of you guys. Others have come to a knowledge of the gospel of grace and peace. Others are able to be educated and pursue their dream careers, street children, getting at least some meal, all because of your generous contribution. Your impact in Kenya, particularly in Nakuru, has not gone unnoticed. I meet with street children who help me distribute flyers for both the School of the Scriptures and the College of Journalism, and they usually ask me, 'How's Mike?' Surely we are a family. We are one. We love you guys. Enjoy." I just thought that was a wonderful letter to get from Moses Gata over there in Kenya, mate.
It really was, and it covered the entire gamut of the gospel revolution and our friends there in Kenya as to what's actually going on, right down to the street kids that are out there that Moses pays to take these flyers and pass them out. We're having a tremendous impact just by giving our support to people there in Kenya who want to get the gospel out. And you talk about your dollar being stretched to its maximum. We actually have a doorway to all of Africa. The Gata family are talented beyond description. Their character and strength and their connection and their fortitude for getting through and their desire to spread the gospel is really just amazing. And even when we do just a little, it goes a very, very, very long way. And I want to say thank you, along with Moses, to everyone. The Canadians always pitch in. I read this letter to the folks. When I read this letter, this was on Sunday, last day. And by then, some people have already had to go back home and things. We may have had less than 15 people in the room. And right after I read the letter, they gave $1,855 for us to send directly to Kenya. So to the folks in Canada, thank you guys so much for loving the people we love and loving the people that love you. They really do love you. We could never do too much to further the gospel by investing in this family. I'm just being very honest with you, the means by which I feel we should do this is not to bypass the needs of this family and try to get some ministry done, but we're really investing in people's lives. They, in turn, are investing in the gospel. They, in turn, are investing in other people's lives. If I could just somehow communicate to you the value of this connection for the gospel and the gospel revolution, if I can communicate to you the value of this friendship that I have with this family, and not just myself, but others in the gospel revolution who are Skyping with them, them and the whole family. I mean, it's not like this is in some way disconnected from the rest of us. It's all part of the gospel revolution. Some of the best questions we get about the gospel and what it actually means comes out of the school of the scriptures. The last one that we got, I just thought, boy, you have to really be at a point where you understand all of the gospel to ask some of these questions. Our last question that came in was about the verse of prophecy about Emmanuel, God with us. And the question came from Moses, is this any longer true? Well, I'd never heard somebody even think whether or not. How do you think the thought, is this still true? Because they listen in Kenya, and the school of scriptures talk about these things. And they said, well, is it true in light of the fact that we are now one, God and man are now one, and we are also one together? Is it true that Emmanuel, God with us? And I remember immediately when the question came in, my response was immediate. No, it's no longer true. It was God with us that was a part of the progression of being one, was first God with us in the form of a child being born of a virgin, and God with us for 33 years. But God with us was a fulfilled prophecy. God is not with us anymore. We are one, because there is a difference between being with someone. If you're with someone, there's two of you. And they picked up on that. So the question came out. So thank you so much again to my Canadian friends who, just because I read the letter, they just pulled out checkbooks and started writing checks. Now, these funds do not even pass through Mike Williams Ministries at all. These funds are wired directly from Grace Conferences directly to Kenya. So, goodness, I was thrilled.
Now, talking about Grace Conferences, I was talking last night on Skype with Yvonne Pichard. I think he's up in Ontario. And he was telling me about an old buddy of his, Ken Eastman, his name was, and he said how he wished that they could have you up there. So I thought I'd nail you on the show and say, and I told him, look, speak to Victor Brennan. Vic will tell you what you need to do in order to make this a reality. And I told him, mate, I'm sorry, I committed you. I said, yeah, we would love to come up and we'd love to visit you up there. But you need to speak with Victor Brennan, who has put together, what did you call it, Grace Ministries in Canada?
Grace Conferences.
Grace Conferences, which is an entity that's been produced to fine-tune getting Mike Williams into your area.
Yes, and we should have all of that information on the website. If not, just call Jeff or email the office for contact information for Vic DeBrennan. I've got to say this too. Always my last contact there is to sit down with Vic and Debbie at the carriage house together before I go to my flight. And I love these people so much. There just is no way that anyone could be as fortunate as I am to be surrounded with people who take the only thing that I know how to do and add their talents and their abilities and their expertise and their heart and their passion and add that to it and make all of this possible. And Vic and Debbie are one of those couples. Goodness, we could sit here and go through this list for the next several months for sure. The commitment that they have to this is off the charts. Debbie is always back and forth to the post office for us all the time, back and forth doing the banking. This entire organization operates to facilitate my coming to Canada so that the Canadian folks can have a tax-deductible receipt for their giving. They set up everything. They make all the plans. They do everything that needs to be done with anyone in Canada where that I am invited. I'm sorry I'm so speechless, but I'm just speechless when I'm thinking about and now there's just hundreds of faces going before me, one of them sitting right here in front of me right now with Barris Bartlett. People with such talents and such abilities, and I have one talent that I know of, and I want to use that, and that's the ability to communicate this gospel for whatever reasons. I don't care why. Over the years, folks have tried to figure out why, and why do you understand it, and why did God give it to you, and did God give it to you, or did you do all the study and did you find out and why did you find out and why did you ask the right questions? I don't know. And I don't care. It just doesn't impress me at all one way or the other. I just love doing it. And for some reason, the ability to communicate this is there with me, along with a lot of other people, such as Bob Hines, who is just he's a rock star to me. I look at the intellect of this man. His understanding of the gospel is just as pure as it can be and can put this in ways that I will never be able. So I apologize for my little verklempt moment here, but you just got to realize, folks, this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever participated in all of my life. I have nothing that comes close to the experience of seeing people who have had their own experiences in life. It's just been brutal what life has done in many people's lives that are a part of this, and just people around the world. I mean, life can be brutal. And then to have this group come together that there is just not a self-promotion bone in anyone that I can see. I just can't find it.
Isn't it amazing what you can get done when you just don't care who gets the glory?
Oh, it is just fantastic. So those of you that support the Gospel Revolution, and maybe you're not closely linked to the inner workings of this, you got to understand, if you're giving because you feel sorry for us, you need to keep your money, because I do more to talk people out of giving, I think, than giving. But
hey, you talk for yourself, buddy. Don't you be. I want all the money I can get my hands on. Come on, you give people, give and give till it hurts, and because you do, we need it. If you want this ministry to stay on the air, you've got to. Hey guys, if you're in Canada and you would like to have Mike come visit you, call this number. It's the phone number of Vic DeBrennan. That is D'OBRENAN. As if Brennan wasn't Irish enough, he had to put O on the front and then D to make it French, and I don't get that.
But you better do it right, I can tell you that.
Yeah. The area code is 403. The number is 686-0841. Now, for those of you who are in Europe or Australasia, why don't you call Jeff Robertson? His number is area code 352-569-4889. Don't worry if you don't have enough people. Why don't you just make the connection and let's see what we can make happen somewhere down the road in the future. In Australasia, in Europe, in Asia, Michael Williams' personal goal and focus is to get this message into the ears of over 1 billion people before he slips off the planet. So we want to invite you to be part of that, don't we, Mike?
Yes. Yes, and to enjoy, my goodness, to enjoy watching the transformation.
You mentioned Bob Hines before, Mike. And I wanted to give Bob Hines a shout out again and just let all of our people know that if you go to www.thetruegospel.net, you can download his book in PDF or Word or in Kindle formats, Nook for iPad, smartphone format. I mean, he's just making it available to everyone. This is over 300 pages of downright. I mean, this will take you a lifetime to read just about. But this guy, and I'll tell you how he wrote this book, by the way. He took all of these notes of all of the tapes that Mike had recorded, and that's how the book started. We were asking him. Sorry, mate?
So amazing.
Isn't it something? But don't forget also to visit Steve Essery, Barry Laney, or go to onemikewilliams.com to get Mike's book. There is a growing body of literature out there right now, which is just wonderful. This is a scandalous freedom, and we are proud to be part of it.
Gospel Revolution.
Says, through the death of Jesus, we are made righteous. If and as long as you do what we tell you, follow the leader and don't ask questions. All you need is Jesus. Oh, and be like us. In religion, they will tell you Jesus died for the sins of the world, but if you ask the average churchgoer whether somebody else is going to heaven or not, they will say, maybe. Did you know that every single major doctrine of the modern church, Jesus never spoke about even once? That's right. Look up your church's statement of belief, and without trying to make Jesus say what he doesn't, try and find in plain black and white where Jesus actually taught that. You know, you're going to find something very interesting. Every single one of those ifs, ands, buts and maybes depends not on what Jesus said, but on what your particular brand of religion teaches. And in Christianity alone, there are 40,000 brands. What flavor would you like? In the gospel, there are no ifs, no buts, no ands, no maybes. When Jesus prayed that he and we would be one in exactly the same way in which he and his Father were one, just ask yourself this. Do you think Jesus gets his prayers answered? Remember, you just aren't that powerful that your opinion of God could ever trump God's opinion of you. And he has made his opinion clear. He says that you are the righteousness of God in Christ. He says you are his righteousness. God says you are his righteousness. How could that possibly be unless you and he are one? Tell you what, let's just take our ifs, ands, and maybes and our buts out of the way and just take Jesus at his word. What do you say?
Michael, last week we were talking about freedom, and we agreed that to somebody who's in slavery, freedom is a scandalous thing.
Yeah, this is true. Paul's experience with the scandal of freedom, it's very, very clear. In fact, he said we are scandalously reported.
Yeah.
When you talk about freedom, you are suspect.
Mike, why is that?
Because we do not understand the new heart that the entire human race has.
But don't all people want to be free?
Yes, I believe that is true. However, Barris, when you have an entire planet being told that everybody that's born on this planet is born in sin and that the heart is wicked and the heart is evil, who the hell wants to give those people freedom?
So really, all they have is potential. They don't have anything good you could say about them. Born in sin, in iniquity their mothers conceived them. Mm-hmm. Everything about them is unrighteous, unholy, pagan, barbaric, going to go to hell unless you're condemned already. I mean, what good is there? All they got now is potential. And now if you've got potential, well, we can help you develop that our way.
And we've got to set something in place that's going to control your wild nature. It is from this basic concept, and it is worldwide, Ferris, that people are taught that children are born into this world in sin. We have people abusing children because if you're born with the devil in you, you're born with Adam's nature in you, then it has to be beaten out. You got to beat the devil out of kids. A large part of Christian world would actually believe that and try to exercise that.
Spare the rod, spoil the child.
Yes, and I really encourage people to listen to the Proverbs series. What's Proverbs got to do with it?
Once I told my mom, children should be seen and not hurt.
Yes. Oh.
She didn't appreciate it. I was 12 at the time.
I bet that that was not what was followed through with either as a result of that.
No, she spared not the rod.
This is where this comes from. It's fear.
Are you saying that the desire to control people is bred out of fear? It comes from, is that what I just heard you say?
Oh yes, of course.
Okay.
When the basic concept is the heart is evil, that it is full of destruction and misery, and when you believe that the very baby you hold in your arm, that you're feeding, that's gooing and cooing, is full of evil, the last thing in the world you want for that child is freedom. Because what else can you do except, if you're free, is to be free to be yourself. We already know what you are. You're evil. You incarcerate evil people, right? You put them in jail, right? Well, we know you're evil from birth, so we just go ahead and create a religion for you that puts you in that prison.
Now, if we want to be kind of kind to people, we will say, well, maybe you weren't born with original sin, but by the time you're 12, you are responsible. We'll call that the age of accountability. And then, by gosh, we know that you have an inbuilt bias and it ain't towards good.
Yes. And this is the very essence of what we are dealing with in the gospel revolution. We know, because of the work of the cross, the bias in all that come into this world is to do good, to love, to have mercy. The record seems to stand in favor of that view. Children get beaten to the point to where that they are retaliatory. They get suppressed to the point to where that they want to explode, and they find that part of them that has the ability to stand up and defend or to reach out and harm someone.
Well, the interesting thing to me is this. After 70 years of communism and enforced atheism, Russia came out of that only a few years back now, and America, that never had enforced atheism, the USA, that was built on puritanical foundation, America has always been a very strongly Protestant country. Comparing these two countries, America has more people in prison than any other two countries on the face of the earth put together, both numerically and by percentage of population, and Russia doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
There's something odd about this, isn't there?
Well, exactly, Barris. And these are things that thinking people want to consider. However, the religious do not want to even take these things into consideration. They excuse themselves from thinking about even possibly considering the scenario that maybe something we've done is not based on truth. If it is truth that we are born in sin, that the heart is corrupt from the moment that it comes into this planet, then there's power in that truth. If that is not truth, then there's a lot of destruction in the wake of the information that is not true.
So freedom is in everybody's heart when they're born. There are those out there who, by reason of fear, wish to control people and find that freedom is more than just scandalous, but it's downright dangerous. And here we are in the 21st century in the United States of America with freedom of religion, freedom of expression, freedom of the press, freedom of choice when it comes to politics. And freedom is almost a byword in America, and it is to the point where Americans describe their country as the home of the brave and the land of the free. Have I got that right?
Something like that.
You're the American in this conversation. Come on.
The land of the free and the home of the brave.
And it's ingrained. This concept of freedom is ingrained in America. Now, regardless of your politics, when I came to the United States, I was just I was amazed. I couldn't fathom why people would want a flag outside their house. But when you realize that America was built on freedom from the infringement by the state on personal attitudes towards religion, speech, and so forth, and politics and so forth, it's not so hard to figure out why that happened. But it didn't just start there. It started, I suppose, in the West. It started around 800 years ago with the signing of a document which now, along with three or four other documents, forms the unwritten Constitution of England. England doesn't have a constitution. I don't know if you knew that, Mike.
I did not know that.
America has a written constitution. England has an unwritten constitution. But their constitutional law centres around four or five documents, one of which is habeas corpus, but the very first and probably the foundation one is Magna Carta. Now, that's where a bunch of knights or lords of the realm got the king and nailed him on the ground until he said, "Uncle," and said, "You're going to sign this piece of paper which says that you don't have the divine right to rule in God's place in this country, and you cannot just do it by yourself. You've got to consider us, and you've got to speak to us before you just run off and do your own kingly thing." This was the basis of democracy in the British Empire, and like it or not, when the British Empire exported its self around the world into various colonies, including that of America, the basis of democracy came with it. Now, also with that democracy came something which is called common law. In fact, in America today, common law, dating back to the Magna Carta, is still enshrined in American law. And today what we want to look at is freedom and the suppression of freedom, what they sound like. What does freedom sound like in the mouths of people, in the minds of people? And what does the suppression of freedom sound like in the minds and in the mouths of people? So we're going to look at a couple of instances of freedom that has been expanded throughout the world. And I know it may not be historically satisfying for many, but let's, at least as far as Christianity is concerned, let's start with the church. Paul says, it's for freedom you've been set free. Mm-hmm. James, when he's talking about liberty, he cannot mention the word liberty without using the word law as well. He says, look into the perfect law of liberty. Every time he uses that word liberty, guess what other word he uses, Mike? Law.
Very interesting.
So, for a couple hundred years, time travels on, and then, as we discussed on an earlier program, the dogma, the law of the Old Testament, became the dogma of institutionalized Christianity.
Yes.
And, in fact, at the Council of Trent in 1550, in the 23rd session, the Roman Catholic Church entered into ecclesiastical law this statement that the priesthood of the New Testament takes the place of the Levitical priesthood of the Old Testament. That is, that the Roman Catholic priesthood was the natural and obvious successor to the Levitical priesthood. And as to the performance of its functions, the consent of the people is not necessary. Now, I know that some of you have looked at the way that the Catholic Church has handled the charges of pedophilia against priests, and you've thought that it was very wrong the way they did it, but you must understand that they are simply keeping to their own ecclesiastical law, because if the Levitical priesthood, who could do anything that they wanted to virtually, and it took an act of God to get rid of them, as in the sons of Aaron's with strange fire, then the priest was the final arbiter of the village. And as to the performance of his functions, the consent of the people is not necessary. If we try and see inside the Roman Catholic Church from this perspective, we suddenly understand how arbitrary the mindset is. But this is what replaced the freedom that Paul alluded to when he said, it is for freedom you've been set free. Stand fast in that liberty. So suddenly we go from law to freedom to oppression back to law. Now, just one last thought on this point, and that is that up until the 18th century, the church and the state were very closely entwined. In fact, there was no state without a church, and there was no church without a state. This is exactly the reason why the Catholic Church was kicked out of England by Henry VIII. He simply changed it to the Anglican Church and made himself the head of the church.
it wasn't like he could make a state without a church. He had to have a church. It had to be there. It was part of the mental fabric of the times. And so wherever you have laws being made, the church was never very far away. Most of all, the history past goes along these lines. Take the state out of the church and you have no state. Take the church out of the state and you have no church. It's just that simple.
Yes, Bears, this progression is really amazing. The Magna Carta did deal mostly with limiting the godlike powers of the king and introduced democracy where that people can vote on things. The issue of liberty, as we know, was something even beyond that. We have a lot to thank Jefferson, Adams, Washington, Franklin, all of these thinkers of our age, of the dawning of this thing called the United States, and it's really amazing what they came up with in a constitution. But freedom and liberty really is so very powerful. But you know, the Puritans first got here in the early 1600s. You know, it's funny from whose perspective this land was discovered. I mean, the fact that there were millions of people that lived here, I don't think they felt very discovered whatsoever.
They called it Puritania. And one of the very early leading lights in Puritania was actually a bit of a rebel at heart, really. This fellow was pretty well known in the day. His name was Roger. And he said, and I thought this was really amusing, he said, how could the Puritans claim the land by right of discovery when it was already inhabited?
Duh.
Not a bad question, is it?
Duh. You know, we call the guys in the 1700s the founding fathers, but if there is a founding grandfather, it's this man, Roger.
I was going to ask you earlier if, because you mentioned Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to the Danbury Baptist Association in 1802, and he was referencing the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, he wrote, "Believing with you that religion is a matter which lies solely between man and his God, that he owes account to none other for his faith or his worship, that the legitimate powers of government reach actions only and not opinions, I contemplate with sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people which declared that their legislature should make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, thus building," the actual full statement is, thus building a wall of separation between the church and state. That concept of separation between church and state doesn't actually even appear in the Constitution, but it came in this letter. He came up with this concept?
You know, the fact of it is he did not come up with this concept. If this letter was written in 1803, then we're talking about at least 175 years before that a man who came here with the Puritans, and actually he involved himself with the native tribes. But this separation that was spoken of between church and state was spoken of in a broader sense, actually, in the 1630s, of the fact that not only should state not be involved in church, but his writings really emphasized the fact that church shouldn't be involved in state. His understanding of this, which is who our founding fathers that we know of, this is the man they were quoting. His writings were very well known. He said that there should be a wall of separation between church and state. And that literally is where this began. And this was written somewhere around 1630.
Yep. I'm reading actually from a historical book here. By 1635, Roger was his name. Roger was arguing that the church had no right to compel membership or contributions by force of law, the kernel of church-state separation. With such an argument, Roger struck at the assumption that the Puritan church subsumed the state. Taxes were levied to pay ministers. A law passed in 1631 required church membership to hold public office. Magistrates enforced the
required.
Required church membership to hold public office. Magistrates enforced the first four of the Ten Commandments. Roger contended that the church had no such right. Furthermore, Roger believed that civil authorities could not make an oath of allegiance to the church, part of an oath of citizenship in the colony. Now, I guess I'm just perverse enough to have read the
founding documents of the first 13 colonies. I took the time to read them when I came to the States, and their letters of incorporation, or letters of patent they used to be called, where Britain, the King and Parliament, gave certain tracts of land to people and gave them names. So Virginia was named after a virgin queen. Georgia's named after King George, and so it goes. They gave them all kinds of names, like the old country.
Yes.
Now, there is not one of those founding documents that does not reference church, and most of them insist that you belong to a church if you're going to be a citizen of that province. And many of them dictated that unless you were a member of a given church, sometimes Anglican, sometimes Congregational, whatever, you could not be in the legislature. So you couldn't take any part in the lawmaking process unless you were a member in good standing of a church. So this concept of freedom of church and state, and we're talking about this because this really, see family, certain things in life really, you can focus on them and they magnify the way that human race views and practices freedom and the fear that Michael was speaking about before that they have of people being free. So back then when Roger comes to the New World, the church and the state, even though they were trying to run away from that in England, I mean, it was such a part of their psyche that it looks like that's the only way they knew how to live, Michael.
Yes, it's just the only difference was we're in charge now. We hated our oppressors, so now we are going to be the oppressors.
Did you ever read George Orwell's Animal Farm?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you got to, mate. It's only a skinny little book. Everyone should read George Orwell's Animal Farm, and the farm animals kick the farmer out, and kind of bit by piece, the pigs get to be the people in charge because they were smarter. The horse is just smart enough to draw a dray, and so it goes. And as they raised a flag and made an anthem, they would sing that everyone is equal, but some people are just more equal than others.
Exactly. And the only voice that spoke up against this was Roger. You know, when you think about colonization, he said colonization was illegal.
When you're talking to an imperialistic mindset like Britain had, I mean.
Yes. Yeah. He said that colonization was illegal. He said if England wants this land, they should purchase it from the people who inhabited it when we arrived. This man actually was very much part of the history of this country, and especially the issue of freedom. His issue was freedom of conscience. He was the first to stand up and say that civil government could not enforce biblical law. Wow, what a concept. He was saying church has to stay out of government, not just that government has to stay out of church. When you stand up and say that civil government has no authority to enforce biblical law, you're saying church must stay out of government.
Is it at all possible to legislate morality? Is morality something that can be legislated?
That is not even possible. We've created more underground crime than any place on earth by trying to legislate morality.
Well, apropos to that point, I'm fascinated by Roger's argument. He was arguing for a religion that was closer to Native Americans' conceptions of faith than the Puritanism under which he was raised. In fact, he reminded Europeans, and this guy started a war of words on both sides of the Atlantic, and he reminded the Europeans that no savage or Indian had ever killed a Christian for religious reasons. Native Americans held no inquisitions to compel obedience to any particular version of the Great Spirit's wisdom. Indians fought with each other for many reasons, but none of them were religious. Fascinating, isn't it?
Utterly fascinating. According to the accounts that, Roger, you know, there's the old saying, if you want someone to understand you, seek to understand first to be understood. And in this case, he really did this. He became very much involved with so many tribes of the northeastern area, and he lived with them. Here is a Englishman, a nobleman, who came here with the Puritans and went out and lived in the wilderness with the Indians and learned their languages. After he established that the land should not be taken nor colonized by England because it belongs to somebody. Rhode Island is the colony that came out of – he's the founder of Rhode Island. But the land for Rhode Island – it was not colonized. This is now we call Rhode Island a colony, but the fact of it is that it, in the truest sense, was never colonized. Now, his whole thing was, if I want to start this settlement here, I need to buy it. But he had such a close relationship with the Indians, they wouldn't take his money. They gave it to him, and they called it for a long time the land of love, or the gift of love. This land was established by love.
What a novel concept.
Yes, and there was no colonization involved in this. And this place that he started, he called Providence Plantation, and it was the first true experiment of complete freedom of thought and freedom of conscience and religion took place. It was guaranteed that if you lived here, you would not be persecuted for your beliefs. This is 100 years before Washington, Adams, and Jefferson and Franklin were born.
Huh.
So this town was started. Jewish people moved there. Puritans lived there. People of all persuasions. And this man made sure that if you lived here, you could think anything you want to think. And believe anything you want to believe and not be persecuted for it.
And say it?
And say what you believe and not be persecuted for it.
The IRS wouldn't single you out. Sorry. Sorry, American friends.
So this was an exercise unknown on the planet, as far as I can tell.
As you're talking, you're reminding me of someone called Count Zinzendorf of Austria. He was a nobleman also, and he also brought a great deal of unity to Protestants in Middle Europe, in Austria at the time, closely associated with the Moravian sect. These are the people who actually would sell themselves into slavery so that they could speak to the slaves about Jesus Christ, the people who were on ships bound for America. Unbelievable stuff, but it sounds very similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's all through history, I think there's been these glimmers of hope that where people were not afraid to follow their heart for whatever reasons. God knows that they were pursued and hounded, and freedom, even at this point, was spoken of as an evil thing.
Gospel Revolution.
The gospel says the war is done. Guilt and judgment, there is none. The Father's covenant with the Son made God and human family one. God and man enjoy the gain. That stealthy gospel rides again. Before the light had dawned in me, difference was all that I could see. Oh, if you don't pray the sinner's prayer, you're on your way to hell's despair. But now I know we're all the same. A stealthy gospel rides again. New wine in old skins cannot stay. New skins a must, or the old will burst, and old and new will fall away. New wine's a fountain from within. That stealthy gospel rides again. How well I see in life's rear view, my criticism came undone. My mind began to open up. Judging had a softer touch. I am so free, so calm, so sane. That stealthy gospel, it rides again.
Roger sounds like a very early Martin Luther King, and he's talking in the 1600s. He's talking, now this is 400 years ago, he's talking to Europeans and he says, the most high and sovereign God and creator has not made them inferior to Europeans. Nature knows no difference between Europeans and Americans in blood, birth, bodies, etc. God having of one blood made all mankind. Isn't he saying all men are created equal and endowed with their creator with certain inalienable...
Try again.
with a couple of rights. Certain inalienable rights.
Yes, that's exactly what he's saying. And the first man on this continent to voice that, as far as I know, in the research that I've done. He really was the first abolitionist that this continent ever knew. He stood against slavery. Remember, this is 100 years before Washington, Adams, and Jefferson were born. All of the things that we didn't listen to that has left us in a quandary to deal with. The wisdom of these things were spoken 150 years before our founding fathers were even born.
He hated hypocrisy, obviously. The Puritans regarded him as a dangerous radical. I mean, those words, they just keep coming back. Dangerous radicals, free thinkers, whatever. And he was considered a dangerous radical by the same people who enslaved the Indians and sent them off to the West Indies.
Yes.
There's something wrong with this picture, Michael.
Seriously wrong. It's mind-boggling when you begin to think about it. The only way that slavery was passed was that they took Roger and sent him back to England on a very desperate mission that he was told he had to go on. And so that got rid of him for at least 6 months, just travel time. And during that time, the institution of slavery was brought in. They knew that if this man was on this continent, that his opposition to slavery would never allow it to be instituted into the American way of life.
The fact that modern Christianity in America would honor and hold up these Puritans as their heroes of a former age says much more about today's Christians than it does about the Puritans. There is something tragically comical, horrendously objectionable, and laughingly hypocritical about any group who would idolize this kind of behavior as being anything like the Christ they profess to follow. It makes a lie out of everything that comes out of their mouths. Here are the words of the Puritans. These heathen dogs, better kill 1,000 of them than we Christians should be endangered or troubled with them.
Mm.
So much for laying your life down. The best way to make good riddance of them is to cut them all off and make way for Christians. This, even now, when I don't claim to be a Christian, I am incredibly embarrassed by this.
Yes. At one point, the Puritans made a raid, the natives, as part of their ritual, at that time, build these really large lodges that would house hundreds. And the Puritans found out about this and became very aware of the ritual. And there was about 600 of them that had gathered in a lodge. And they caught them all inside. They surrounded the place. They torched it. And for those who did come running out to try to save their own lives or their families, there were swords waiting for them. And they were run through with swords or go back in and die with the other 600 of the Native Americans that were being burned to death by the Puritans.
As I study history, Mike, it's my experience that what you say about the law brings wrath, Paul's words in Romans, there ain't nothing like religion.
Mm.
To hurt somebody else in the name of God and go to bed smugly confident that they and only they hold the truth. It is
and that they've done the right thing.
It's macabre is what it is. Roger writes, although they have not so much to restrain them, both in, and talking about the Indians, both in respect of knowledge of God and the laws of men as the English have, yet a man shall never hear of such crimes amongst them as robberies, murders, adulteries. There are no beggars and there are no orphans as among the English. Enjoy what you're looking at right now because I'm lost for words.
That's where this leaves you, is totally at a loss for words. What we really know of freedom didn't come from Europe. what we know of freedom and liberty came from the Native Americans, not the invading Americans.
Roger says all civil liberty in the Indian government is founded in the consent of the people.
Yes.
Do you reckon George Washington might have read this bloke?
Yes, I think Washington, Adams, Jefferson, all of them read these writings because this was the main voice of understanding of liberty that was in this part of the world after the arrival of the Puritans. One of the funny things that I read is that Rogers started the Baptist Church and he was the first one to quit the Baptist Church.
Yeah.
He was not afraid of evolving thought. So the man establishes a church, and the man who founded it quit.
Yeah, he started the first Baptist church in America, and yet in typical tragic, tragic humor of the history of the Christian church, it was the Southern Baptists who most defended slavery for centuries, and only just 7 years ago, from this year, 2013, it was in 2006, that they actually officially apologized for their role in both the Ku Klux Klan and their role in slavery in this country. Extraordinary. Oh, man, words fail me. But this is just religion for you. Self-serving, in total denial, rewriting history. That's religion. In August of 1644, the House of Commons ordered the public hangman to execute a public burning of Rogers' book, The Bloody Tenant. If you can't hang the man, hang his writings. I mean,
hang his
book burnings.
Hang his writing.
Yes. Even book burnings. Unbelievable.
Yes. To say that what we live in as liberty came with us from Europe is just not true. We learned it from the Native Americans after we decimated 2/3 of their people. The Indian tribes really embraced the Europeans when they got here. It did start causing some trouble when they started sectioning off parts of their land, saying this now belongs to us. But what the Indians were willing to give, the Puritans thought it best to take by force.
Roger was accused by other church hierarchy of seeking to take away all the gospel, all instituted worship. They gave themselves away with that word, instituted. That's what it is. It's an institute. And you only graduate if you pass the exam, and you only pass the exam if you're like us. To take away all the gospel, all instituted worship of God. And Roger...
Nasty man.
Roger wrote that even Jesus Christ commands tolerance of anti-Christians, and he said forcing of conscience is soul rape. Extraordinary. Yeah. Word, isn't it?
Extraordinary is exactly right. Isn't it amazing that the accusations against him, which was the worst that they could come up with, is you want to do away with institutional Christianity.
Bad boy.
You are the nastiest, dirtiest, most evil man on earth.
Bad boy.
If people listen to you, Christianity is not going to survive.
We'll lose our income.
Our status and our belief that it is our right to control any new government that comes along.
And we have to control you, because if we don't, you might rise up against us. We might lose our income.
Yes.
Now, the reason we're talking about Roger is because he's a picture book example of how freedom thinks, how freedom acts, how freedom makes itself hated, really. How free thinkers the world over and all through history have been hated, diminished, and anything but accepted. And when they are accepted, it's always grudgingly.
Well, you know, we are in a revolution, and it is about freedom of conscience. And as we've been pointing out, we're not the ones that have spoken of this first. Our founding fathers were not the ones who came up with the original concept about this. And obviously, Roger was not the one who came up with it either. Jesus came up with it.
It's almost like it was in his heart. I mean, if he came out of puritanical background and then
educated in Cambridge.
Yes, highly educated, moved with ease in the upper echelon of British aristocracy. It seems that this man, gosh, almost like he was born with this in his heart already.
It really looks that way. I mean, because there was no one taught him this, that's for sure. I personally am convinced that how he learned this concept was through his study of the scriptures and his understanding of the cross. The one thing that we know about this man's theology is that he was at least universalist. He made direct statements that a person did not have to know Christ personally to be put in right relationship with God, that a man didn't have to be of any certain spiritual persuasion to be numbered amongst those that are redeemed.
There are many more people out there with these concepts than we're aware. The most quoted theologian of the 20th century would be a man called William Barclay. William rose to the top of his church and was offered the prime spot in the church, but he said, "Nah, I don't like all those robes." Barclay is a man that almost every preacher in this country has quoted at one time or another. But what people don't know is that he said he was a convinced universalist. I'm reading here, perhaps one of the best tributes of Rogers' life was paid to him by an opponent who said that his opinions subverted the state and government of this country and tended to unsettle the kingdoms and commonwealths of Europe. There is this common thread, whether it's William Wilberforce, who was the major cog in the ending of Britain's part in slavery, whether it's Martin Luther King, rabble-rouser, whether it's Roger here, who was a subverter of good, clean Christian thought and all things profitable and righteous. It doesn't matter who it is. If you speak out on behalf of freedom, you're a rabble-rouser, Michael. Hey, Michael, you're a rabble-rouser, mate.
I think the shoe fits.
Interesting, the common thread. The reason that we're talking about Roger here, family, is because Roger is a remarkable picture of how freedom, I was going to say freedom fighters. Isn't it funny how, depending on who you are and where you're coming from, they're either freedom fighters or terrorists. And the church sees people who think freely as terrorists, don't they?
Oh, they definitely do. If I could show you some of the letters that I've gotten over the years. You know, there's one thing to advocate anarchy, and there's another thing to advocate freedom. People who do not know freedom think that the advocation of freedom is anarchy.
I was talking to Glenn Klein just this week, and he referred to Roger, and he said that there is something about DNA. There is an even more amazing thing about this man we call Roger, isn't there?
Well, I don't know how much more about him could be amazing, but yeah, Roger Williams is my uncle, my eighth great uncle, to be exact. And about 100 other researchers agree with those conclusions. So,
so as Glenn Klein said, DNA will out.
When I read this man's comments about freedom, it really is uncanny for sure.
Well, we hope that you've enjoyed this today. We apologize for keeping you in the dark about who Roger was, but we wanted you to concentrate on the actual picture of what freedom looks like and what the opposition to freedom looks like. As I study history, I have to assure you of one thing. It never changes. Mm-hmm. Control is always going to say the same things. Radicals. Freedom thinkers are always going to speak the same words in the same way, and it always is going to come down to this. We are all equal with certain inalienable rights. I've got the words out then. And what the American founders put together in the Constitution of America, now, it's not perfect. Nothing is. But what they put together was very much the written form of what Roger Williams actually taught and lived for. And his words are what really are at the core of American, the foundation of America, Michael.
They really are. And I think one of the most delightful things to me is to find out that the concept of freedom that we live in did not necessarily come from our European ancestors in as far as thought. It actually came out of the Indian tribes of America. That blew me away.
Freedom, like every other gift from God, is buried deep in the heart of every man when they're born and birthed into this planet.
Listen in your office, in your car, or even this was the end of time.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks. We really appreciate every single one of you gospel revolutionaries, and especially our bona fide producers who, by their financial support, ensure that this weekly PowerCast always goes out on time. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us on area code 234-564-0971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we're always open for a Facebook meetup at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Remember, no religionists were harmed in the making of this program, and thanks to Marcel Rose in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, and from deep in the heart of Texas at the long end of the cul-de-sac behind the Golden Gates in the Citadel of Unvarnished Truth.
Good night, Beres.
Good night, John
Thank
Boy.
You guys. Yes. Thank you guys so much. I don't think that I have to emphasize too much to convey the love that we have for you. And we appreciate you beyond words. And we know that you love us. And it's just an amazing thing to get to be a part of. So let freedom ring. Don't be afraid of the freedom that you have. The freedom you have is powerful. And it will cause you to get to know yourself. And believe me, you're going to like what you find.
Let's finish with these words. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. Stand firm then, and do not let yourselves be burdened again by any yoke of slavery. Remember, join us same time next week, where we will be doing the same thing all over again.
Better, better, better. I found it was in your pocket.
Welcome to Pigeon Religion. Really, it's for the birds.